Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, AGLCA, and our Admiral sponsors, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide and Magazine, Green Turtle Bay Resort, Marina Life, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you're dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org/ship-store. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone. The Homeport crew is back. Steve is with us, and Beth is on vacation this week. So it's basically Steve and I, but for those non-members out there listening to the show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, including the Atlantic and Gulf intracoastal waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers. Our association's main purpose is to put people together, both socially and information-wise, on the excitement of doing the Great Loop. Our webpage is www.greatloop.org. Feel free to visit. There's loads of free stuff out there to find out if the Loop is something you might be interested in. Just before we start, I'd like to thank everyone who came to our spring rendezvous. It was a great event in Norfolk, Virginia, and I think everyone had a great time. We are putting the registration for the October rendezvous on our webpage, hopefully today, if not by Monday. The dates are October 21st through the 24th, and we hope to see you all there. Let's get started with our show today. Many of our loopers are preparing for their cruise north to the Canadian waters, and we thought a segment on entering Canada and then re-entering the United States might be beneficial. We've invited Captain Gene Schnagel to give us some pointers. Gene was able to give two seminars at our spring rendezvous, and they were fantastic and very informative. During the show, you can call in with any questions or comments. The number is 877-497-1815. Okay, Gene, let's get started. Basically, what documents do you need to enter Canada?
Well, before I get started, Janice, I'd like to say thank you for having me join you today. And thank you and Steve for the wonderful time at Norfolk, Virginia, at the rendezvous. It never ceases to amaze me over the years just how many fascinating members we have in this organization. So it was a great time, and I had many questions regarding the very subject we're talking about this morning. The regarding the documents going into Canada, I think one of the most important things you have to remember as you're preparing your loop adventure and heading north is that you are leaving the United States. Many times we tend not to think of Canada as a foreign nation because of our close relationship, and especially loopers, because we're all on the water together, Canadians, U.S., German, you name it, from all over the world. We're all traveling as one happy family. But it is a foreign nation, and we have to be prepared as we leave the United States proper. Probably the most important document I would personally recommend is that you have a passport. It's not required to go into Canada. However, it is required to return from Canada. And I've had many people that I've told, if you're going to leave the country, make sure you've got your homework done before you try to come back. So I'd recommend strongly a passport for every person on board the vessel. I'd also recommend that they carry vessel registration documents. Again, a lot of these things aren't required, but You're going to be asked some questions at customs going into Canada about vessel registration, and it behooves you to have that information available. I also like to tell boaters that having all documents with you, what you're telling customs people and U.S. Coast Guard people or Canadian Coast Guard people, should you be boarded and checked or should you be clearing customs, is that you are not what I call a person who owns a boat. You are a boater, and there is a distinct difference. And loopers are boaters. They like to do their homework. They like to gather information ahead of time and be prepared. And they learn a lot about what they're doing for recreation purposes. So I would recommend all your vessel registration documents be with you. And proof of insurance for your vehicle. Again, not required, but should you have an incident, especially outside the United States proper, it's going to behoove you to have that with you and have those contact numbers available.
Gene, I may have jumped in too soon. Where would you recommend entering Canada?
Well, there are, on the loop, you're going to want to go counterclockwise. And the reason you want to go that way is you want to go with the currents down the river. So entering Canada, you're probably going to be going up either the Champlain Canal or you're going to be cutting over the Erie Canal to the Oswego, up to Oswego, New York. And now you have an option. You can either go up to Kingston, Ontario, and go to the Thousand Islands, which is beautiful boating country. I would recommend that highly. Or there is a shortcut, and that will take you directly to the Trenton, Ontario, which is the Trent-Severn Waterway through the interior of Canada. And that you reach by going straight across from Oswego, New York, across the middle of Lake Ontario, to a junction called the Murray Canal, and that is a 5-mile-long canal that will cut through and take you directly into Trenton, Ontario. Either one of those locations, you're going to have to clear customs. However, at Kingston, a point of information would be that Kingston trains their customs people, Canada trains their customs people at Kingston. So chances are very good you're going to get boarded for an inspection. If you've done things properly, that would be no problem whatsoever for you. If you go directly to Trenton, you clear by phone. And at Trenton, you'll get off the boat. The captain will. All passengers must stay on board. You'll walk into a small dockside building, pick up the telephone, call Canadian Customs. You'll report in, give them the information they require. Should they want to inspect your vessel, they will come down to the boat and tell you to wait. Excuse me. However, chances are they won't. They're going to get the information by phone. They're going to give you your customs number, which you are going to have to post, and they'll tell you exactly where that goes on your windscreen. And you are all set, and now you're off for an enjoyable time through the interior of Canada.
As far as supplies go, what can you and can you not, I should say, what can you not bring into Canada?
Well, there's two things that are of specific interest to the Canadians. One would be alcoholic beverages. And you are allowed to bring in 1.4 liters per person. Now, they will check for this, and if you are over that limit, there are significant duty fees that you would be required to pay. So watch that carefully. The more important item right now is weapons. And we hear this question all the time about, should I have a gun on board my boat? I am a retired law enforcement officer, 27 years as a homicide investigator, and my personal recommendation, I'm not an attorney, I'm not giving legal advice, but my personal feeling is you don't need a gun on board a boat. We don't have any acts of piracy that I'm aware of occurring along the Great Loop. I've never heard of one, and I've never seen a report of one. So unless we're over in Somalia, I wouldn't worry too much about that. The Canadians are very strict, and should you be wanting to bring a firearm into the country, you can do that. However, they have what they call non-restricted firearms, which are some rifles and shotguns, and you need a declaration form for that, and you can go online to Canadian Customs, and they will give you all the forms and the information you need. But there are also restricted firearms, which you cannot bring in, and these are include most of the handguns. And then it goes on from there to prohibited firearms, which include many other types of weapons and things such as mace and nunchucks, and if you can think of it, it's out there. Basically, the law in Canada seems to say whatever you have, if you use it as a weapon, then it becomes a weapon. So you want to be very careful of what you're taking in there.
My first thought would be, as boaters, we carry large, sharp knives. We need to cut lines at times. Is that considered a weapon, or how do you handle that?
Jane?
Please, Jane.
We have a caller who has a question about alcohol, and his name is Chuck. So, Chuck, go ahead and ask Jane whatever it is that you need to know.
Sure. Chuck, you there?
He's still showing his whole time, Steve, I think.
No, it says zero.
Oh, I'm seeing him in blue.
Well, I'm seeing him in red.
Okay.
Oh, well, go ahead, Gene. When we get him live, we'll see what's going on.
Okay. Maybe I can touch a little bit for Chuck here. Alcoholic beverages. If you meet the, let's see here, you are allowed to import only one of the following amounts of alcoholic beverages free of duty and taxes, and that's a total of 1.14 liters or 40 ounces of alcoholic beverages, or up to 8.5 liters of beer or ale. Now, that is per person, so you can figure it out and bring it in. Sometimes somebody else doesn't use alcoholic beverages, they're still allowed to bring that in.
Everybody mentions the duties, but do you have any idea of how much they really are?
No, I don't, Janice. I'm sorry. Those change all the time, so I'm not sure what they are. Again, by contacting Canadian Customs, I have found that they're very responsive, although I do know one particular thing. Prior to Norfolk Rendezvous, I contacted Canadian Customs again because I had one more question that applied back when Kathy, my wife, and I did it at the loop back in 2005 and 2006. And that question was, I had always heard they did not count open bottles, just full bottles as part of that allowance.
So go and open all your bottles and take a shot at it.
Well, that's what the theory was. I know that I cleared at Trenton by phone, and they asked me all the questions about how much I had, and I said, this one's open, that one's closed, this one's open, and so forth. And they told me, no problem on the open ones. Now, at Kingston, I know some couples that we traveled with on the loop went that route, and I found out subsequently that they paid heavy duties because there it was counted as a quarter of a bottle and a half a bottle.
Oh, they added it up.
They added it up. And Chuck,
are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you have a question?
That is his question.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you. I'm going to close now.
Okay.
Now,
see, we were discussing knives. Would the Canadian authorities consider that a weapon or something you can bring in? You have to declare how do you handle your knives that you just basically have for boating safety and boating emergencies.
If you had a switchblade type knife, yes, you would have. That would come under their prohibited weapons. And there are others on that list. I would suggest everybody check those prohibited weapons lists. They are online. Now, as for your normal knives that we all carry on board for line cutting, for working and so forth, they're not concerned with that, at least in my experience. Only if if that knife was used as a weapon, then it would become a weapon, and then you'd have a situation. But for normal everyday use, no, they're not. Another thing I should mention is your 12-gauge flare gun is not, that's exempt now. They do not consider that a weapon. We hear a lot of stories about that. Do not be concerned with that.
Oh, that's good to know.
Unless you used it as a weapon. So it's just a flare gun, and everybody can carry that.
Gene, this is kind of an aside, but weapons on board can be problematic in the states that have strict gun laws. We had a member that was in New York where the gun laws are very strict, got himself arrested for having weapons on board without a valid New York State permit. So it's not just Canada. You need to consider what state you're going through and whether or not your permit is valid in the state that you're cruising through.
And you are absolutely correct. With the new concealed carry laws throughout the United States, and I know I reside in Wisconsin, which just went through that and passed it, there's a lot of concern over this. And if I have a permit in Wisconsin, it is not necessarily good in New York. Each state has their own laws, and you have to be very careful, especially as a looper, because you're transiting so many different states, to do your homework. And I keep referring to that. I get redundant in regarding it, but you always have to do your homework. And laws change on a monthly basis, so what you may have picked up today may change tomorrow. So it behooves you to keep on top of it. Bottom line, I go back to you don't need it. I just found no need for a weapon out there. We had an incident involving a theft situation. That's got nothing to do with boating. That happens anywhere. And local marinas are well protected. Anchorages, if you follow your waterway guides, you're going to be in excellent areas. They've been researched. People who do this professionally, such as Skipper Bob Publications and Waterway Guides, They know what's going on. That's what they do on a daily basis. So I'd be very careful carrying one. Besides the fact you're going to have to declare it going into Canada, you are also going to have to redeclare it when you come back into the United States. The U.S. border is very concerned about weapons coming in now. And if you don't and they find it on board, you're going to find yourself in a situation you don't want to be in. So
Gene, we're about halfway through the show, and I have two other areas I'd like to cover for getting into Canada that I think of is of interest. Licenses. There seems to be controversy or confusion over what kind of radio license you need in Canada.
Radio license. Okay. When I went back in 2005 and 2006, you did not need a VHF license, nor did you need an operator's license. However, I have it up on screen right in front of me here, that you do not need a license to operate a VHF radio, radar, or EPIRBS aboard voluntary ships operating domestically. Now, what that means is you, as a recreational vehicle, are considered a voluntary ship. And operating domestically means within the confines of the United States of America, within the borders and the waters of the U.S. But ships are considered operating domestically when they do not travel to foreign ports or do not transmit radio communications to foreign stations. What that says, and my interpretation is, you're going to Canada. That is a foreign port, and you are communicating with Canadian stations. Therefore, you no longer fall under that exemption, and you are required to have a VHF radio license. Now, if you go online to the FCC Marine, they have a site there that they will provide you with the forms, and you can do this in advance and get it all via online applications. But
so it's a U.S. license to operate in a foreign country.
It's a U.S. license, but you also, as well as the VHF license for the ship, you also need an operator's permit. And that is explained in those VHF applications for marine transportation. So check that out carefully, do your homework, and you should have no problems with it.
And do the Canadian equivalent to the FCC require something different?
My understanding, and again, I would check with the FCC, but my understanding is yes, because they are now operating within United States waters. So it applies to them as well. But
okay.
I would double check that.
Okay. Now, the last thing, pets. Can you bring pets, or what restrictions are to bring your pets into Canada?
Well, that is an excellent question, Janice. I have a 60-pound white standard poodle named Dee Dee that was our first mate when we did the loop. She was 6 months old when we left, and she was an old-time sailor when we finally got back into our home port. The key to taking a pet is be sure that you have a current, up-to-date medical record rabies shot for them, and they have their tag. You can get involved in some issues if they do not have their rabies shots up-to-date or their other shots. So see your vet prior to leaving, get the rabies brought up-to-date, and make sure you have a copy of that document with you, and then you'll have no problems. All we had was people trying to give her a doggy treat at customs. So.
Well, that's been great. I think you've covered how to get into Canada. As far as getting home, there's really two areas that I should be explicit about. We have U.S. citizens coming back into the U.S., but I know also our Canadian voters would be interested in knowing what they need to enter what to them is foreign waters in the U.S.
Janice,
do you have any information on
that? Janice and
Jean? Yes.
Please.
Before you go into that, there is an issue that I seem to remember with plants going into Canada, where we've had boaters that had to go out of Canadian waters and get rid of plants on board. Do you know anything about that, Jean?
A little bit, and you're absolutely correct. They are very restrictive now of bringing foreign vegetation and what we would call invasive species in and out of the country. So if you go on U.S. Customs website, they have all restricted items listed. Canadian Customs website has the same thing. You can go on there, they'll tell you exactly what type of materials that they do not want brought in and what type you may have problems with. So, and you're right, I see a lot of boaters have home gardens and all sorts of plants, but I'd go on ahead of time and just check those sites.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, let's start with Canadians coming into the U.S. I know I kind of threw that at you. If you're not prepared, we can do that another week. But I don't know if you do know of any what the requirements are for Canadian citizens to enter the U.S.
Canadians coming into the U.S. are going to run into the same restrictions we are. They are going to need their passport. All peoples coming into the United States now must have a passport. Now, having said that, you can, if you're a U.S. citizen, you can use alternative identification, but it does require things like a certified birth certificate, not a copy of a birth certificate, but a certified copy. And you're better off just getting the passports. Our world has turned to that now, and a passport for all loopers is just, to me, a necessity. Have it and you're all set. The same thing I said to U.S. voters, I would say to Canadians, have all those documents, your ship's papers, any training you have from, say, Power Squadron courses, document that information, keep those copies with you, and have it in what I call my ship's book, not my ship's log, but my ship's book, and I keep all my papers together. One other thing I want to bring up quick, and that is to mention the decal number. You need a decal if your boat is over 30 foot in length to enter United States waters. So for Americans going into Canada, do this, and you can do it online. It's a $25 fee, but get it before you go because you're going to need it when you come back. And it's good for 1 year, and you apply online for it's called the Custom Vessels User's Fee. And that's Customs Vessel User's Fee decal. Apply for that online, and you're all set. For Canadians, they can do it the same way. Get that. They'll tell you where to display it on your vessel, and you're all set. And when you come across the border, you're done. Now, very quickly, Canadians and U.S. Loopers are probably going to be coming through on the west end of the North Channel. That's going to be their return point. Now, they can either, there are a number of locations. You can go to Detour of the island and clear at customs there at the marina. But the easiest way now is to go directly to Mackinac Island, pull up to the fuel dock, and everybody gets off the boat, not just the captain, but everybody. You walk right up to a video phone that is now called OARS, OARS, and you'll pick up that phone, you'll have a video contact with U.S. Customs, you'll lay your documents on a faceplate and show it to them, they'll ask you whatever questions, and you're all done, and you enjoy Mackinac Island. Simplest process out. Canada does not have OARS in place yet, but they are working on it, so we probably will see that in the near future at places like Kingston and Trenton.
Sounds super simple.
It is.
Steve, do you have any questions?
Well, I don't have a question. The comment I have is when I came back from Canada on the boat, we checked in at Drummond Island, and there's a customs agent that works at the marina, and it's very simple. I mean, he comes out, takes one quick look at the boat, and you're done. Did my line go dead here?
Yeah, I can't hear you, Steve. I think Steve lost his connection.
Yeah, Gene, I think he did,
this
too.
This has been very informative. I thank you very, very much. Gene did wonderful seminars at our spring rendezvous, and we're just beginning to plan October. Again, the dates for October are the 21st through the 24th, and we'll have it on our webpage, hopefully this afternoon, if not by Monday. Gene, again, thank you. You've been wonderful, and we appreciate it. We'll see you all back next week. Thank you.
Bye-bye, y'all.
Bye-bye now.